Our third case for this morning is Advanced Tactical Ordnance System against Real Action Paintball.
May it please the Court. There are two issues on appeal in this case. The first is whether the District Court had specific jurisdiction over the defendants, and I'd like to come back to that in just a minute. But first, I'd like to focus on whether the preliminary injunction was proper. The reasons why the injunction is invalid, I think, can be grouped into two broad categories. The first category are reasons that are evident just from examining the four corners of the preliminary injunction itself. You don't have to know much about the facts of the case to conclude the injunction is invalid. The second category of reasons requires more examination of the underlying facts of the case. Was there a likelihood of success on the merits? Was there an abuse of discretion? And I don't have time to get into those.
Well, what would be a proper injunction?
What would be a proper injunction?
Yeah. I mean, I take it you're concerned about the likeness, the prohibition against using a likeness of paintball.
First of all, I don't think any injunction is proper.
Yes, I know that.
Okay.
But that's not what I'm asking you, right?
So maybe you'll just start with Part A, looking at the injunction. Clients are barred from manufacturing, shipping, selling, or otherwise disposing of or advertising or offering for sale irritant projectiles that bear the likeness. Now, given that this isn't a trade dress case, and given that I suppose you weren't affixing a trademark on the projectiles, what does that prohibit?
Well, that the result from that is that there should not be any part of the injunction that is addressed to the likeness of the projectiles at all.
So, I mean, I don't know if we can just focus on the injunction, because the problem is how this is a trademark case is something that I think needs to be discussed. And also, I do actually think the personal jurisdiction issue needs to be discussed. It's an interesting trademark case in that what they're saying essentially is that in the way that you used their name on your website, you gave the impression to the outside world that the pepper balls or whatever you want to call them, the irritant balls that you're manufacturing were really a continuation of their old product. That's what I understand their complaint to be. So it's not really a trademark misappropriation, but it is a sort of a form of passing off, I think, that they think you've done. And if you have done that, then they believe they're entitled to a remedy.
I think the most they could possibly be entitled to would be an injunction against continuing to display on the website those two announcements that it displayed, or an injunction against further email broadcasts of those two announcements. Everything in this case is premised on those two announcements. And the first one was up on the website for 1 week. The second one was up for 3 weeks until the TRO issued. And they haven't been up since. So to answer your question, I don't think any injunction that goes beyond that is necessary in this case.
So the first of the announcements, I seem to have not brought this with me, but anyway, the first of the announcements says something like, you know, we are Real Action Paintball, or whatever they were. It uses their full name, Pepperball Technologies, Inc., and it says something like you're continuing that. So you would be willing to say that you can't refer to their things, like we are making the same things that Pepperball Technologies, Inc. made, something like that.
Well, the only sentence in the first announcement that the district court found was a problem was the first sentence of the announcement, which says that, I think it says, Advanced Tactical Ordnance is proud to announce the acquisition of materials, machinery, so on and so forth, once used by Pepperball Technologies, Inc. And I think it's important to note that in both announcements, every single time the word Pepperball appears, It is a reference to the legal entity, Pepper Ball Technologies, Inc., all those three words. That's clearly a nominative use. It's not a trademark use. It's not an infringing trademark use.
So, but it could be a very misleading use. I mean, this may be a business tort case that is clumsily trying to move forward as a trademark case or something of the sort. And they actually argue that you waived your nominative use argument anyway, that you didn't raise that properly with the district court.
They argued that, and in my reply brief, I respond to that and point to where in the briefing I did make that argument. Mm-hmm. But
so what about personal jurisdiction? You did have some transactions with Indiana people.
Well, let's talk about that. Rep 4 made a sale of projectiles to someone in Fort Wayne, Indiana for $17.49 on August 31st, 2012. That was the same day this suit was filed.
Do you sell directly or through wholesalers and retailers?
I believe they sell both ways.
So you do sell directly from a website or...
The website is interactive. Rep 4 sells a lot of different products that are unrelated to this case.
So you are selling into Indiana. You know that you're selling into Indiana.
Yes, they have made some sales into Indiana. But I'd like to focus on this specific sale because the court seemed to find it significant.
If you're arguing that a lot of the sales into Indiana, like the paintball sales or the sales of the licensed Pepperball things, you have one product from Pepperball that you've got a license for, are not the specific activities out of which this lawsuit arises.
Correct.
So thus no specific jurisdiction based on them.
And I would submit that even that one sale that occurred on August 31, 2012, does not relate to the claims being asserted in this case. And let me explain why. Those projectiles were not sold under the name Pepperball. They were sold under Rap 4's trademark, Less Lethal Live Rounds. And that invoice is on record. And this fact is undisputed. Every one of ATO's witnesses was asked whether they knew of any sale by Rap 4 of projectiles bearing the Pepperball trademark.
I don't understand that. reference to, you know, the original OEM manufacturer and so on. This goes up on your website, and then someone buys one of your products in Indiana. How could anyone know whether the website had played a role in this purchase?
We don't know. There's absolutely no evidence that that one purchaser from Fort Wayne, Indiana, bought it through the website. He could have mailed in a purchase order. He could
Are
have called them up
on
the phone.
Proof argument that it was their burden to show the link?
Yes, it is. The plaintiff has the burden of establishing personal jurisdiction once it's been challenged, and it was. And they proffered absolutely
I'm not sure that's true. You put up a web page that anybody in the world, I suppose, can order through the web page. You have orders, and people see the web page. Now, maybe they're not buying through the web page. Maybe they're buying somewhere else. But it seems to me if you make misleading representations on your web page, and you're inviting sales from all over the country or all over the world, why wouldn't that expose you to a suit in Indiana?
Because the test for specific jurisdiction is express aiming. And I refer the court to its decisions, for example, in the mobile anesthesiologist's case.
I wasn't aware of this distinction between specific and general jurisdiction. What is that?
General jurisdiction means that your contacts are so extensive that you expect to be sued in the particular forum. And the district court did not find
you. Well, I don't understand. If I have a web page that's available to anybody in the world who has internet access, and I put up a misleading ad in my web page, why am I not inviting suits from anyone in the world? I don't get it.
The key is
deliberate misconduct here.
The reason there's no specific jurisdiction is because RAP 4 did not expressly aim its website towards Indiana.
I don't understand that. You put up a fraudulent ad. Why don't you take the risk that people are going to be influenced by it and buy your product?
Well, we obviously take issue with the allegations.
The courts have not gone that far. I mean, one could, and it's one of the real struggles, going all the way back to the 1997 Zippo case in Pennsylvania, the real struggles of how to deal with personal jurisdiction in the internet context. This court had mobile anesthesiologists, the E360 Insight case, a number of other cases where jurisdiction based on the fact that you did something in the host state, in the state where you're thinking of bringing the suit, tries to intersect with something that would actually support universal jurisdiction anywhere. I mean, you could have been sued in Lithuania, I assume, for this website posting if somebody in Lithuania wanted a pepper ball. So the doctrine has struggled to find some kind of rational limits, and I think actually mobile anesthesiologists is our most recent sustained effort at that.
Well, there are some other recent cases from this circuit that provide guidance. For example, a couple years ago, I think, in B2 versus Evanoff.
B2 was another one, yeah.
B2. In that case, the defendant operated a website, and they actually had 20 customers in the state of Illinois for their dating site. But this court found that was not specific or not enough to confer specific jurisdiction because the website didn't target Illinois with merely 20 customers. Here we only have one customer in Indiana for the pepper ball. So
what does it mean to target? I don't understand that. What does it mean to target Illinois or target Indiana? You put up a web page. You hope that people from all over the world will order.
Well,
sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. Like in the mobile anesthesiologist case, it was this little anesthesiologist in Houston who didn't realize that people in Chicago were going to be looking at his website because he was performing actually quite a local service of driving his truck over to different places in the greater Houston area. And even though his trademark looked about the same as one outside of the Houston area, the conclusion was he really had no interest in, no desire to, wasn't, if you looked at the context of it, he wasn't trying to serve anybody in Illinois. So it sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. Your client may not be in a business where that makes any sense,
right?
Because maybe people across the world are interested in irritant, projectiles.
Well, I think this court's decision in Tamboureau versus Dworkin provides some guidance.
See, I'm bothered by the fact that if there is wrongdoing here, which there is, I think, it's deliberate. And it seems to me if you deliberately post misleading information on your webpage, and it is a product, it's not like a personal service. It's a product that can be shipped anywhere. There's a lot of interest in this sort of thing. I should think you'd assume the risk of being sued by anybody who... Now, maybe that person has to show... That's a point you kind of intimated, or maybe Judge Wood asked you. Now, maybe you want to show that the purchase was related to the web page. This person was actually misled. I can see that.
And there's no showing of that in Your Honor.
So there's no...
Here in that. There's none of that in Your Honor. But your underlying question as to, well, if there's something bad on the web page, shouldn't that subject you to jurisdiction anywhere? That's simply not the law in this circuit.
Why not?
Well, I refer you again.
No, but what's the reason? Give me a good reason.
Well, the reason is because as a mobile anesthesiologist, the rule is to be subject.
A reason, not a case.
Because under the Constitution, there's only jurisdiction.
Constitution. Come on. Give a good reason why you shouldn't assume the risk when you start putting stuff on a web page, which you know is available all around the world. You deliberately put up something which is misleading, trying to cheat a competitor. Why shouldn't you be suable anywhere?
Well, you may be suable anywhere. And I would argue that they would be suable in California.
You would be talking about whether it works is essentially a cost-benefit. There's a cost to using the Internet and a benefit to using the Internet. A cost might be if you really have to go defend yourself, expect, as they said in Worldwide Volkswagen, to be hailed into court in any jurisdiction on the planet. Maybe it would have such a deterrent effect on Internet use that we've taken, you know, a club instead of a fly swatter to the problem. But it's not clear, and that's why this has been a difficult area.
It is a difficult area. And, you know, to cite a couple of analogous cases, in the Indianapolis Colts case, which is a pretty old case, there the out-of-state defendant was found subject to jurisdiction for something it was doing relating to the Colts trademark in Baltimore because the court found that the highest concentration of likely people who are going to be interested in Colts materials were in Indiana. Even though the defendant there was not in Indiana, it was subject, but that was because that's where the likelihood of confusion was going to exist. Here, these pepper ball projectiles are not purchased in Indiana in a greater concentration than they are in any other state. And there is nothing on RAP4's website that...
That's the irony of it. If you can create a global fraud, then you can't be sued anywhere.
Well, and that's right? A problem. And many of this court's decisions...
You can always be sued where you're incorporated. You can always be sued where your principal place of business is. You can always be sued where you have enough contacts for general jurisdiction.
But RAP 4 does not have any of that in Indiana.
This case should have been in California as far as I can tell, but that's a different matter altogether. So you are into your rebuttal time. I don't know whether you want to save anything. But
I will save the balance of my time for rebuttal. Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Blumenthal.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court.
So, Mr. Blumenthal, let me ask you the question that really bothers me about this. I can certainly see the misleading nature of this August 2012 announcement, RAP4 is proud to announce the acquisition of machinery recipes, etc., used by Pepperball Technologies. But I'm having a lot of trouble seeing this as a trademark case, since, number one, trade dress is off the table, as the judge said. I don't know why it is off the table, actually, because maybe it shouldn't have been, but it is. And number two, nothing is ever sold under the Pepperball trademark. So they don't advertise, this is like Pepperball, and they even put the disclaimer that I see every time I walk into Walgreens, you know, on their website, RAP4 is not associated nor affiliated with Pepperball Technologies, Inc., blah, blah, blah. Our rounds aren't made by Pepperball. So why aren't you here really on a business tort? I'm not saying any of this should have happened, but I'm very worried about
the court. I can answer the court if I'm prepared to answer that. It appears to me now in studying and preparing for this hearing that in drafting the briefs the way that I did in the reply, that I jumped down the rabbit hole that counsel set up for me to fall into. What the court is overlooking in this particular case is the fact that the two announcements are not the only two things that were posted on the Internet or sent out to people. There is a document, 325-31 and 325-30, which was Exhibit 00 in the preliminary injunction, which Judge Van Bocklin had the benefit of having seen, but which we didn't specifically recite to this court other than in a footnote. And with the court's permission, I'd like to read the sections of that. This is literally within 24 hours of the first announcement. So these were all published that we first learned of it and that we first came of it. And this is from the Facebook page of RAP4, which is the company's Facebook page. Clarification about RAP4's acquisition of Pepperball Technology. It has come to our attention that there has been some misinformation and confusion in relation to our acquisition of Pepperball Technology. Number one, Pepperball Technology is foreclosed, comma. Information about this can be found at the following link, and they give the link. Number two, the original recipe and machinery to produce pepper balls was acquisitioned by RAP4, and RAP4 is now able to manufacture the original pepper ball under the name of RAP4 Less Lethal. Then goes on with a three and a four. Number four gives the address of what was formerly Advanced Tactical Ordnance in Indiana, which is Phoenix International. Additionally, they were at that time using meta tags, the hidden text, not only on the web page, but on the computer code to drive people.
Right. I understand that Google doesn't use meta tags anymore for their for their search results, that they use much more sophisticated algorithms. And I guess their other argument about the meta tags is that they did have this one product that legitimately involved Pepperball technology.
But they never produced any evidence to suggest that they used Pepperball Technologies Inc.'s name in advertising that particular product for sale. That is called the Hot Shot, if I believe.
I think it is the Hot Shot.
Okay. Yeah. On their website, they claimed and they used the name Hot Shot. Never did they say Pepperball. Never did they say Pepperball Technologies.
They could have done, though, right?
They went out of their way not to do that, because when you clicked on the link for the Hot Shot, instead of it showing the Pepperball name on the unit, the cartridge, if you will, that's what this was, it was a cartridge, they blotted out Pepperball's name and put RAP4. They didn't want anybody to know that this was a Pepperball product. And we produced several exhibits.
Why is that trademark infringement?
They used our mark, the name Pepperball, which is our trademark name, in their advertisements to drive sales of a product of theirs that looked identical to ours,
that they claimed was identical to ours. This Facebook page business before.
Well, we did, Judge.
It is in our brief. Very carefully at the things that were in your briefs and appendix.
It was cited and referenced in our original motion for preliminary injunction as well as our briefs. Yes, ma'am. And I apologize that we didn't make more of a thing of it initially, I guess because it was something so obvious to us that we sort of stepped over that. So to that extent, I apologize. But it is the evidence that was before the district court and that the district court had before it when it made its determination as to what was a fair and appropriate
resolution. So what about the disclaimer in the second posting?
The disclaimer in the second posting does not take away from the fact that they were still claiming and alleging that they were producing and selling original Pepperball projectiles to the original specifications and standards of Pepperball Technologies, Inc., now ATO.
Why doesn't the sentence RAP4 live rounds are not made by the current Pepperball Technologies, Inc. refute that?
It doesn't refute it because they're still claiming that the live rounds that they're manufacturing are still manufactured on our equipment with our recipe, with our formula, using our standards and specifications, which, frankly, they admitted they had no knowledge of. They didn't know our recipe according to them. They didn't know our formula. They didn't know what quality standards we employed. They didn't know what specifications we employed. Yet they said every single one of those things in their announcements. They told it to all their customers, and the emails that they got back from their customers they sent it out, also they kept repeating, and I apologize.
I understand, I'm saying, were they misappropriating your goodwill? Were they
ma'am.
I mean, that I understand, but trademark, I still, every time I looked at your brief and went through, you know, the analysis of trademark, part one was that you used the mark. And you've told me one Facebook page where there's a comparison. This is like Pepperball. But that's all I'm hearing.
It doesn't say it's like Pepperball. It says they're now able to manufacture the original Pepperball under the name of Rapp4 Less Lethal. If the court wants, I can just...
No, it should be in our record someplace.
Yes, ma'am, it is. Okay, I mean, they didn't say they're making one like ours or that's similar to ours. They're telling the whole world they're making ours. And when people contacted them...
That's the way this case has been litigated. I mean, it's the briefs were both difficult to wade through since they were not... There was a lot of, you know, mudslinging, and there was not a focus on the issues that would have been more helpful to me anyway.
I understand why the court says what it says. But having recognized that, the facts are that the district court had the opportunity over the course of a year and 6 days of hearings, plus a seventh day on an unrelated but related matter to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office situation, to hear all of the evidence. And the court's decision is replete with sufficient information and citing to sufficient information to justify not only its decisions in this case, but the entry and need for a preliminary injunction.
Well, now that takes me to the preliminary injunction. The court talks about, I mean, counterfeiting, you know, and so on. The court talks about a lot of things, but the injunction strikes me as in need of tightening. If we assume personal jurisdiction, if we assume that there's actually a trademark issue here.
What does bears the likeness mean?
As the court has explained to counsel and to the defendants, that using the color scheme that Rapp4 has chosen...
That's a trade dress case.
With respect, Judge, I understand that an issue of trade dress has been taken off the table for purposes only of the preliminary injunction. It has not been decided or determined or removed from the case entirely. But we're talking about, effectively, a projectile, a bullet. You have a specific caliber.
So why does
caliber
he issue an injunction against bullets that look like your bullets without allowing fair litigation of the trade dress theory?
The only look that we have besides having the caliber that we have, which has to fit in the launchers that use these, is the various colors that the manufacturers all use to differentiate.
The Supreme Court has heard cases about trade dress, you know, dry cleaners with green, and, you know, that's an issue you could litigate, but it's unfair to suddenly pull out of your back pocket when you've told the parties that it's not on the table, all of a sudden saying don't use red or a combination of red and black.
Oh, it wasn't all of a sudden, Judge. The original TRO was more expansive than the TRO. It was modified at the defendant's request twice to make it more clear so that defendants would not feel that they were in any way violating the court's order, yet as the court is aware.
But it seems like overkill because you have these objectionable ads, but they were just a couple, right? Just a couple.
No, sir. They continue to send out emails to customers when they inquire. They continue to market
it. With that same legend about produced by the original OEM manufacturer? I thought that was just a couple of web?
The original announcement ran the one time. The second clarification announcement ran again. But even today, and we brought evidence to the court that even during the course of the year that this matter has been pending, no, that the announcements remain out there.
Let me make myself clear.
I'm sorry.
It's one thing if what you did was to copy the appearance, not what you did, what
I understand, Judge.
Did, was copy the appearance of your product. That's one thing. It's another thing to say that what you did was different. You made representations about how you had actually had all the manufacturing techniques of Pepperball, and you made an identical product. That's something else. Then that's the fraud that's alleged. And the question is whether forbidding them to have a bullet that looks like your product is an appropriate remedy for that type of fraud. Especially since these things, they're all the same size to fit the launchers, and they look alike. They're little balls, and they come in different colors. A lot of them are red.
No, with respect, no, a lot of them aren't red. That was not the evidence. That was the evidence the counsel tried to convince the court existed, but the court did not.
They said they were all red. That's wrong. But a lot of them are red, right?
No, sir.
Some of them are red.
Ours are red.
Well, because you're the dominant manufacturer.
No.
So maybe that makes a lot of them red. But
Swatz were orange and white. Other companies use yellow. And now we're talking now about the live
browns.
But
do others use red?
The red, no one else uses red for a live, irritant, powder-filled projectile. No one uses red and black for an irritant, powder-filled projectile of a stronger payload, if you will, for a heavier amount of PAVA powder or capsaicin powder.
But are you saying that they copied the appearance of your projectile?
They made it a point, Judge. There is an email.
No. Answer my question.
I thought I was.
See, I thought that the bears its likeness, that this was some kind of expansive remedy for the fraud that was in the web page. Now you're suggesting this is actually a separate trademark violation, that they copied the appearance of your projectile.
I'm not sure if I understand exactly what the court's saying, and so I apologize for that.
You can imagine this bears its likeness as some, I would say, rather clumsy or excessive way to remedy the fraud in this that you've got all the manufacturing methods of Pepperball and now you're using them to make an identical product. That, I thought, was the fraud. And I can imagine, although I would not approve, of this bears its likeness as a remedy for that. But what I don't understand is how it could be a remedy for a trademark or trade dress infringement consisting of copying your projectile, because I don't think you're arguing that they copied your projectile.
The evidence was specifically that they copied.
That's not part of the case. That's the problem. That's of the disorganization of this case. And just getting back to another example of that on the counterfeiting means, you know, that I went to China and had somebody manufacture purses and I put the name Coach on the purse, and then I went to the streets of New York and said, come buy a Coach purse for $15, and then of course the thing falls apart and it hurts Coach's reputation. The district judge even says the mark must be counterfeit, meaning a spurious mark identical with. Rapport doesn't sell pepper balls called pepper balls that people are going to think, oh, pepper balls has really gone downhill, they're terrible now, they leak, they do this. They sell their own things under their own trademark. And so it's a bad match for your theories.
I don't believe
it's not a counterfeiting situation.
The cases that I am familiar with suggest that if you are using our trademark to drive traffic to your competing product, that that is a violation under the Lanham Act.
It's not a counterfeiting problem, though. They're not putting Pepperball on their projectiles.
No one puts their names on projectiles, even their efforts to do so.
Or even the box or whatever. They say, we are not selling Pepperballs. We're selling something that's just as good. Just like if I go into Walgreens, I want to buy some Pantene shampoo. There's a Walgreens shampoo and it says, this isn't affiliated with Pantene.
They don't. Walgreens does not say that that the Walgreens brand shampoo is identical in every respect to Pantene. They are not allowed to market it that way. They are not allowed to bring people in by saying, we have taken all of the shampoo of Pantene and all of their machines and their recipes and their standards, and we are now making Pantene, but we're calling it Canteen or hair shampoo. In the age today, where you can publicize globally that you are and have effectively taken over all control of a brand and have tried to rebrand it, if you will, at best, that they're now going to call Pepperballs less lethal because they're making them now using the same
form. They're making them and they're a different company.
But they're not making
Pepperballs. The problem is your argument today is going very substantially beyond what the district court presented as the grounds for its analysis and as the grounds for its preliminary injunction. And so it's raising a question in my mind, how far beyond the district court's rationale ought we to go in evaluating this injunction?
I don't believe, and if I'm trying not to go beyond, because I believe that the district court was correct in making its determination here.
I'm sure you do.
Because, Judge, they are using our name in hidden text on their website to bring people to their Pepperballs.
Now you're back with meta tags, and I'm not sure that.
No, Judge, with respect, there's a difference in my mind, and hopefully in the court's mind, the district court's mind, between meta tags and hidden text. The meta tags are in the code of the HTML programming. In this case, we also had an exhibit. I believe it was Exhibit P, as in Paul, and I can get the note.
But do people buy by the color of the ball?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, it's one of the specific requirements on the GSA website, because in part they want to make sure they're getting Pepperball quality product. And since we are the only ones who sell red, red is, in fact, a requirement on the GSA contracts. And
but
so
to be... that's the only reason? We could have a plethora of red and green lights, but it's good for people all to understand, you know, that red signifies a certain level of irritant, you know.
The red, while it signifies a certain level of irritant, whether it's red or red and black, wasn't really what my point was. The point is that the government, as part of its evaluation of products that it will purchase for its own use in whatever branch, undertakes significant testing of those products to determine which products, if any, are satisfactory for their use. If the defendants, in this case, want to bid on a GSA contract, then they have to go through the same process of letting their product be evaluated, and then the government may say, fine, we'll let red or blue. That may be. But right now, they haven't done that. But the
seems
hidden
far afield to me. Maybe you can just sort of wrap up.
Yeah, I just want to say the hidden text. The hidden text is actually text on the actual web page that's typed in the same color as the background of the words that you're reading. So where you may see Hotshot, for example, they could have Pepperball right before Hotshot, but in the same color, white on white, so you couldn't read it, but the Google search engines can, and it brings you right to that. So there is a difference between that and the meta tags, and they were doing all of those things using the word Pepperball, not the name Pepperball Technologies, Inc., just Pepperball. So I thank you very much for your time. I hope I've answered all of your questions.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Whatever else you have to say, Mr. Oberhauser.
I have just a few comments. I'm concerned a little bit when I hear the court characterize the first announcement as having possibly been fraudulent. And I'd like to just point out to the court that Rep 4 did sign a contract to a supply contract with this other company, Apon, to supply the projectiles. And that company, Apon, had been the exact same manufacturer, one of the two manufacturers, for Pepperball Technologies, Inc. At best, that first sentence in the first announcement, it is in fact truthful. At worst, it's ambiguous. It all boils down to the word, what does acquisition mean? And we submitted a dictionary definition from the Webster-Merriam dictionary that you can acquire something by having a contract to control it. I just point that out. Secondly, with regard to Mr. Blumenthal's arguments about a name being blotted out on the Hotshot product, there is simply no evidence of that in the record. Mr. Blumenthal also represented.
So you're saying there's no evidence of this alleged hidden text?
Well, there is hidden text, and there is meta tags for Pepperball. But again, that was entirely legitimate because Rap 4 sells authentic Pepperball products, the Hotshot product. What he was claiming was that on the Hotshot product there was a picture in which we had blotted out or obscured the Pepperball brand name on it, and there's simply no evidence of that. Mr. Blumenthal also suggested to this court that his company is the only one that has sold red Pepperballs. That's simply not the case. And I think if you do a word search in our brief for the word foray, F-O-R-A-Y, that is the South African manufacturer that Rap 4 buys products from. And in the record, its projectiles are all red in color.
How many companies worldwide are in this market?
I don't know exactly. There's at least four or five that I know of. There may be more. But I would, Mr. Blumenthal also mentioned that he said that there were ongoing communications that he felt that infringed trademarks or infringed rights, and again, there's no evidence of that in the record. I would just sum up by saying that there is no evidence that RAP4's website was expressly aimed at Indiana. There's no evidence that its email broadcasts were expressly aimed at Indiana. Rap 4 did not sell projectiles bearing the Pepperball trademark in Indiana or anywhere else.
Okay.
There's no confusion in Indiana.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.